Welcome to My Spoonie Sisters, featuring stories from special guests dedicated to empowering those with chronic illness. Our goal? To connect people and provide the support and tools they need to live a better life. For those with chronic illness, our energy levels just fade faster. We must be more purposeful with the spoons allotted to us. So grab your coffee or tea, sister, and tune in as My Spoonie Sisters share stories of living with chronic illness. Hi, my Spoonie sisters. It's your host, Gracefully Jen. And today I have the pleasure. I'm sitting down with Amanda Che, the author of The Girlfriend's Guide to Lupus. I'm so excited to have her share her story and her book with you. So hi, Amanda, how are you?
Hello. Thank you so much for having me here. I am doing well.
I'm so glad to have you, and I can't even wait to dive in here. So I want to say real quick that this was such a treat. Thank you for providing the book to me. It was an honor to read it, and you're amazing.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. It was almost like I was sending people nudies, you know, like of me when I wrote the book and I first sent it to my editor. It's literally like I sent a whole full version, close-up, zoomed, naked picture of me because it felt so raw and so vulnerable. And I had no, you know, I hadn't written anything before. I never knew if I would be, she would laugh at me and say, you need to, you know, go into a new field. So to hear that someone found value in it is really heartwarming to me.
And I think we need more of this. We need more of this in our community and in our lives because, you know, sometimes we see that surface level of people. But we need that real and that raw, kind of scary close-up of our lives, yeah. What people are dealing with.
Well, yeah, I think that's one of the reasons why I wrote it. I think in the very beginning I said, like, look, I am just like you. I screw things up. I don't know what to do. But sometimes I do the right thing and I've learned some of these things. So I just want to share it with you. Like, I didn't want anyone to think like I was better or I knew any better or my lupus was any better than anyone else. But there was just a few different nuggets I found along the way. And it helped me, so maybe it'll help them.
Absolutely, and I love that. So I want to dive in here and ask you a couple questions here. So can you share a bit about your personal connection to lupus and what inspired you to write a book on the topic?
My journey with lupus is a little different than most other people's. While it takes typically between 5 to 7 years to get a diagnosis, my story was mostly probably about 20 years long. And that's because when I was pregnant with my first daughter, her name is Anna, it was my only child at that time, a terribly rough pregnancy, very, very sick, many, many hospitalizations. And it was just like a fight for my life. But never once did anyone say like, what the hell is going on with you? This is so weird. I had her and I continued on. And I would just start blaming all of these things like joint pain or mouth sores. I would just blame it on me being brutal on my body, right? And like some crazy workout person. And only when I ended up, you know, about 15 years later, ended up in North Carolina when I was really in a lot of pain, did I go and get help first from an ortho because I thought it was an ortho thing. My knees and my hips and my heels and ankles, they were hurting. So of course it's ortho. And the doctor was one of these like, oh, you're just getting old. And I'm like, screw you, buddy. You better run some blood tests. And that's when I was diagnosed with my first autoimmune disease called Sjogren's, which typically attacks the cells, moisture cells in your eyes and your mouth. Fast forward 8 more years when I started losing my hair. And I was like, oh, hell no. Now this is very serious, not the hair. You know, I could put up with anything else. And that's when I eventually got the diagnosis of lupus. So it took a long time. I just think I'm not a normal case, but it is a very challenging disease to diagnose.
Okay, so my question next is, did all your hair come back? I mean, you have beautiful hair. So what happened there?
Thank you. It did come back. Now I've learned. I once heard a rheumatologist say that losing your hair is your body's way of protecting itself when it's being harmed, right? So think of like not having a period or your hair shedding, like the body's like, look, this is not essential. We need to just preserve. And so I like to think of it like that. And it makes a lot of sense to me. So yes, hair has come back, but it will have its moments when it likes to, you know, fall out in great amounts. And that just means I know I'm in a flare.
I think that's a really good way of explaining it. And I wish my doctors had explained that to me, because that's been my journey this year. And a lot of people see that I have this long hair, but they don't see in the back what's going on and the underneath. And I used to have very, very thick hair. And now it just feels like I have baby hair. I don't know.
And yeah, it feels different, doesn't it?
It does. And so it's coming in white, which they told me is normal. So I don't
know. It's kind of like after chemo. Have you seen people who've gone through chemo, their hair, sometimes it changes texture, it changes color. Yeah, I have noticed that about my hair too. It's just, I mean, I'm grateful that it's here. It's just not the same, right? You know your hair. And I'm like, okay.
Yeah. And you know, I'm kind of jealous of the people that have it coming curly, because I would be okay with that. If it came gray curly, that'd be so cute. I'd be okay with that.
Yeah. I know, right? Just keep the hair, please. Yeah. The tricky thing about lupus is that it's considered heterogeneous, which just means, versus homogeneous, where it's like maybe more targeted to an area. Lupus being heterogeneous means it can go throughout your whole body. So some people have a rash, some people lose hair or mouth sores, and some people need whole new organs because of the damage of lupus. And still, unfortunately, people continue to die. I somehow get this Google alert on lupus. And last week, I think I cried twice because there was a 27-year-old who died of lupus and then a 48-year-old who died of lupus. And it is still a very chronic and curable disease did I mention that my 23-year-old now has lupus too? So as a mom, it's really rough.
So, okay. I'm assuming since you have the diagnosis for your daughter, it probably hopefully went a little bit better going through the diagnosis journey.
Yes.
And I want to say, everyone, if you look at the front of the book, it actually says for my daughter, Anna, who has lupus and is totally a badass.
She is. Yes. Yes.
So how did that feel as a mom seeing your daughter go through this?
I am at one, I'm working on a lot of therapy for me. Two, I would have never harmed my daughter if I had a choice. And so that allows me to say three, it sucks. It's terrible that she has the diagnosis. It's clearly she got it from me. I would have never wanted to give it to her, but it's what we have. So I allow myself to not hold on to the guilt of, oh my gosh, I gave her this. And instead now turn to the point of, I have a bestie that I share my lupus with. When I'm down, I can call her and be like, I hate this lupus, or I hate what's going on. And she can do the same for me. So I do think part of my reason, I get a little philosophical, but I think part of my reason I have lupus was simply to support my daughter in her journey.
That's beautiful.
Thank you.
Absolutely beautiful. And what a great support system you are for her.
Oh yeah. I'm like, have you read my book? When she'll say certain things, I'm like, have you read your mom's book? Turn to page 42. And she's like, I haven't read it yet. I mean, she has now, but it took a long time. I'm like, I know a little bit. Can you please just listen to me? But I know her journey is her journey and she has to define it certain ways.
You sound a little bit like me. I've actually hounded my daughter saying, so have you listened to the podcast yet? I have an episode for that.
I know. I guess I shouldn't have written a book. It's the same. Like I've taught yoga and group fit for so many years and my kids would be like, oh, yoga? No. So I shouldn't have done any of that. And maybe they would have followed the path.
They never want the things until they want the things.
I know, right? Their friends like yoga and they're like, yeah. I'm like,
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, my son's girlfriend is probably one of my big cheerleader supporters on Instagram. She goes and likes every post I ever make. And I'm like, ha 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 ha.
I know, right? At least I got her.
Yeah. You know, I'm a little bit.
That makes me feel better. You are cool. You're a cool chick.
So in your book, how do you approach explaining lupus to someone who may not be familiar with the condition?
Well, I will first assess if they are worthy of me giving my time to explain it to that person, which is very true. Because the male woman, I do like her. I'm probably not going to go launch into a whole thing. I will often give a little bit of information. Like this guy, this is a perfect story. This guy at the gym, right? This big meathead hadn't seen me in a while. During that time I had lupus, you know, I was really sick. And he's like, whoa, what happened to you? Because I used to have a really, really good muscles. What happened to you? And I'm like, you know, my patience was low. And I just said, nothing. You look so different. What happened to you? And I'm like, I have lupus now. And he's like, oh. And he just said, oh, well, if you, you know, think positively, you'll get better soon. And I'm like, you know, then my patience was really thin. You know, I wasn't going to tell much. And I just said, you know, this is a chronic disease and it's incurable. And he's like, well, you should try harder and you can fight it. And then I think I just gave him a look and I walked away. So someone like that, it's, I'm not going to waste my energy on them. I probably should have never said anything in the first place. That was my takeaway. But if it's someone I really care about, of course, I'm going to sit down and explain to them about it, what I know about it, what my challenges may be, and kind of what the future would be. But, you know, I just feel like I have this much energy in life, right? Every day is this much energy. And I am very conscious on how I decide, how I divvy out that energy. No longer now do I hold on to some relationships that I have, or do I do some things that I've used to do, have done in the past, because I'm aware that everything is literally being taken from me and I want to choose where that goes. That's kind of a very different explanation that you may have heard when we talk about lupus.
You know, I think that's a really good point. You know, you don't want to waste your spoons on explaining to someone that doesn't care. They don't care. They're going to walk on throughout their day. They are not affected. This is not going to change their perspective on people or life or anything. And it's just a waste of your time.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I can go on and be like, you know, 1.5 million Americans have lupus and 1.35 million American women are the ones who have it. But in the end, it's all my choice. And I can't be mad at that gentleman, or I can't be mad at anyone else. It's simply me deciding where and when I tell that. But in the same regards, I do say lupus, there's a lot of unknowns when it comes to lupus. By far, the majority of the population has no idea. They'll be like, Selena Gomez. And sometimes I'm like, yep. And then that's all we say. But I do encourage people, if they can, to share a little bit about lupus so that people begin to understand what it is, how it impacts people, just because there is a lack of awareness in our community.
When you were going through the process of getting your diagnosis and your answers, what did they look at other disease possibilities for you? Was that a challenge?
Yes, it's kind of weird. I was first diagnosed with Sjogren's, but then I also was diagnosed with neonatal lupus, which is a more rare lupus that just happens when the mom gives it to the baby and the baby's born and the baby usually ends up perfectly fine. And doctors were like, you're not a little baby. And I'm like, no. And so they just disregarded it. They let it go. So that was probably a first clue that, yeah, you had lupus. But it went through a point where my hands would hurt a lot. And my rheumatologist at the time, she was lovely. And she's like, oh, you've got RA. And I'm like, okay, rheumatoid arthritis. But she's like, something doesn't seem right. So we would continue on a path until, you know, one thing would be found or another. When it comes to the American College of Rheumatology, there are 11 criteria for diagnosis, and you need to have 4 out of the 11. And my doctor, I think she did the best that she could at the time, but she was waiting for this one blood test called an ANA to be positive before she sent me on to a specialist, because there is not a blood test when it comes to lupus. So that's part of the reason why it's so challenging to get that formal diagnosis, and why it is often confused. It mimics many different disorders. It can mimic a flu. It can mimic, you know, a dermatitis, eczema. And that's makes it even more confounding when you get into a diagnosis process and the frustration that comes with it.
Yeah. And, you know, while you were talking, I went and opened the book because I was like, I remember there's a section where you were talking about this. And it talks about like the most commonly felt, and you list fatigue and pain and rash and fever and hair loss and all the things. And, you know, I can't pretend that I would love to be a rheumatologist, because some of these illnesses, they mimic and flatter each other, right? And, you know, my first rheumatologist, not great. And I was handed 3 pamphlets as I'm walking out the door. I'm looking through them going, okay, so I have something, and it's either RA, lupus, and I don't remember what the third one was, but I was like, that doesn't sound like me. So I was just looking at the RA and the lupus going, okay, which one is what I have? And, you know, it was a year later that I still didn't have an answer. And that was when I said, it's time to see a new one.
There's a lot to say through all of that. But most people should know, the listeners would probably want to know, that it's really hard to get into a rheumatologist. We wait, even I'm in a great city. I'm in Raleigh and Durham, and there's Duke and the University of North Carolina, some great systems here. And I waited 8 months to get into my current lupus rheumatologist, and she's awesome. But it took 8 months. Can you imagine feeling terrible for 8 months and just waiting and waiting when each day is simply a challenge to be like, can I make it through this day?
Absolutely. And it's unfortunate that so many people go through that. And it just breaks my heart. It breaks my heart every person that we meet, you know, whether it be on Instagram or Facebook or even in person, people that we meet, and they're suffering and waiting. And it breaks my heart.
And, you know, not everyone is tenacious or has the resources or maybe has the voice to speak up and be like, no, that's not what we're going to do. Can you do this? Or you didn't hear me when I said that. I would like you to do this. Or I'm not feeling heard and listened to. Many of these things happen to certainly a large amount of women. And when we deal with the idea of pain, gaslighting is very common.
Absolutely. And have you dealt with that before?
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's that example of telling that doctor who, you know, oh, you're just old. You're old now. You're almost 40, you know, at that time is a perfect example of gaslighting.
Yeah. Has your daughter dealt with that?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you're just this, you're just that. There were so many things, the poor girl. Let me start from the beginning. Lupus has a genetic variation that we know, and you need an environmental trigger to pull it off. So me being pregnant with her, really rough pregnancy, brought on my lupus. For Anna, she had mono in college, and that's when she became sick and was sick for many years until I was diagnosed. 5 months later, she was diagnosed. So that seems all easy, but during the time, we didn't know, one, that I had lupus, and so we didn't know what was wrong with her, and she would go to the ER for some of these terrible issues, and they would just be like, oh, you know, it's probably just a UTI or something, you know, just dismiss her and send her on home. And over she went, and she was like, I just feel like I'm going crazy, and, you know, it was a hard time for her. She's just in college. She's going to have fun.
And to feel like you're dismissed time and time again, it's unfortunate. When we do find a great rheumatologist, it's exciting to share that with people and to help others that live close to where we are. And you know, I think there's a girl on Instagram. She also has an app. It's called Help, spelled H-E-A-L-P. And on there, they have a section where you can actually load in your rheumatologist as a recommendation to people because they want to build.
That's nice.
Where people can find a good rheumatologist in different states. And what a fantastic idea. So
That's working backwards versus us being like, this one sucks. Don't go here. Instead, let's just give the ones that are great.
Yeah. What a great way to help people. So understanding a flare, how would you describe a lupus flare to someone that's not dealt with that before?
I'll give you an example because I'm still in one, but I'm coming on the tail end where I had COVID about a month ago. And maybe a week or so after that, I started with extremely red. Not just like, oh, you look like you have a little sunburn, but like you went really crazy on your mom's, you know, 80s blush rouge. So I started with a really bad red kind of burning face that went down to my neck and went down to my chest. And then the second thing that started to happen was I would wake up in the morning and the minute my feet would hit the floor, I would be like, ooh, it felt like I had run in high heels the night before, just really, really sore feet. And then came the sore hands. So for me, I know that those things started to account to, all right, my body, lupus is getting high. I think of a flare as just a disease activity that is increased. Many different things can bring it on, stress being one of them, which is very common. Change in medication, because I had to stay off. I have this medication I inject in my stomach every week. I had to remove that for 2 weeks while I was on my COVID Paxlovid protocol. So I think these things are what brought it on for me at that time. And they're just usually, luckily, it's not a, I don't feel like this is a terrible flare, because anyone who's taken prednisone knows that it is a terrible drug. That is not desirable, but it's also a much needed drug. So my rheumatologist and I have a plan to try to stay off prednisone no matter what. And thankfully, it's been, I think, about a year that I have been able to not take any of that.
So may I ask, what was your reason behind that, not wanting to be on it?
They have found that the damage done from the prednisone is not as beneficial as to the lowering of the flare of the disease activity. So that basically the risks outweigh the benefits when it comes to it. And when I was at a Lupus Foundation conference in North Carolina recently, there was a rheumatologist there, and he was speaking a lot about this idea of prednisone and how harmful it can be. So that's just the knowledge I gained from that and my physicians. I'd been to Africa last year for a few weeks, and I'm like, look, do I need to bring some prednisone? Because we know that it's going to really mess up a bunch of things. And so that was our talk, like, okay, how much gabapentin can we give you so that if you're beginning to feel like this, you take gabapentin and try to get away from all of that pain that comes with it. And it worked, thankfully. It was the first time I've traveled internationally for a longer period and ended up coming home and being like, oh my gosh, I feel normal.
That's fantastic. I think I actually remember that. I remember that's right around when I started following you and chatting with you.
Yeah. It was amazing. I was very grateful because traveling is just something important to me. So when we have these diagnoses that do end up changing the trajectory of our life, I don't want to go too far from what I want to be able to continue to travel, but I know that I'm going to have to make some changes in how I do this. And so that was a good time to make sure that I had everything in place. I had lots of rest involved, extra rest that I usually don't do, but in the end, it ended up helping me. And I'm grateful for that.
Okay. So what would be the top 5 things in your Spoonie toolkit for travel?
Calling all Spoonies. As a host of a chronic illness podcast, nothing lights up my day more than hearing from you, our incredible listeners. Whether it's a topic close to your heart that you want us to uncover, or you are keen to show your own journey as a guest on our show, your voice matters. Living with chronic illness can often feel isolating, but through the power of podcasting, we can come together as a community to uplift, educate, and inspire one another. Your stories, insights, and questions drive the conversations we have and the topics we explore. So if there's something on your mind, a story that you are just itching to share, or a guest you'd love to hear from, don't hesitate to reach out. Your voice is not only welcomed here, but celebrated. Let's continue to amplify the voices of those living with chronic illnesses and create a space where everyone feels heard, supported, and empowered. Together, we are stronger.
Well, can some of them be mental? Like, a lot of them are like, I am a big one on understanding the need for rest. We get to a new place. This is assuming, again, that we're traveling maybe somewhere that goes into a different time zone or something that is far. It's not taking you, an hour from here laying on the beach, but it is taking you somewhere else. And so people might not like to hear this, but I do try to put in my very first day of getting there, resting. Right. I know you want to get out. I know you want to explore. It looks amazing. But simply staying in the room and getting to bed early or getting a nap in is really important way to reset yourself on a trip. So that's one. That's an easy one. And then anything that you need that helps you when it comes to finding the good sleep. Is it a good eye mask? Is it a blanket that you love? Any of those aids there that help you with that is an important one as well. Maybe that's 1, 2. 3, it depends on how the person is. I am not a super organized travel person. I usually kind of like a bowling alley where you have some bumpers along the side. That's how I like to travel. So when I at least have those bumpers up, I feel more comfortable where I know I'm going to spend the night at a hotel, or I know how I'm going to get there. And so that allows me to be less stressed. So maybe that in that area that comes to someone, maybe they want a whole travel, everything planned out. Maybe they want a travel book that they come with, or maybe they're okay with being flexible when it comes to those portions. 2 more. Oh, man.
Ooh, yeah.
What are 2 more? Okay. 2 more. These are kind of the based on health and wellness. 1 would be some type of water receptacle. Yep. Water bottle, whatever it is. When we get out of a new schedule, we often don't drink nearly as much water. So take something, make sure you fill it up, pee all you need up a storm. And then the last one would be try as best as you can, even though you're in a new place, to eat the way you know that you need to eat, that is best for you. Sure, absolutely try all those good things that you want, but kind of follow that 80-20 rule the best you can. maybe this is your time, you know, 80% good and the 20%, let's go crazy and enjoy that stuff. I think all of those things together allows you to roughly stay similar to how you function through your everyday, but just giving you a little bit of a buffer to help support you along those changes.
I think that's a great list. I love it. I hope everyone's taking notes.
Yeah, take notes because I might not remember that.
Okay, so my next question. Chapter 8, you talk about your squad goals and building your ultimate support posse. So how do you go about doing that?
You have to be a choosy chick. You know, I think I said something like the girl you used to pee in the kiddie pool when you were a kid with, maybe you don't need to have her in your support group if she's no longer there for you. So I think it's a close assessment of who your family and friends are. Do you like them? Do they build you up? Are they there for you? Are they supportive? Great. You can put them in choosing how you want. I mentioned creating a support caucus, just a fancy law word that just means like a group of people that are meaningful to you. I had suggested when you get a lupus diagnosis to bring these people together, sit them all down or pull up a video and tell them exactly what you're going through now, how you feel now, what your future may look like, and then how you're going to need their support. The best time to ask for support is when you don't need support. The best time to plan for a flare is when you don't have a flare. Because when we get into those points, they take too much energy to try to figure all of these things out. So you know, when you say, you know, find your squad goals, get the best people you can, that's exactly what I mean. Fill them in on the loop and most likely they will be there. And in fact, I think that we don't want to bother. I don't want to bother. I can see my neighbor Pat right there. I don't want to bother Pat. You know, she's busy. I don't want to ask her to just go get some milk for me or whatever it is. But these people are so excited. Well, can I do something for you? And if you're like, yeah, can you bring me some soup? They would be gung-ho to go do that for you.
100%. It's true. And you know, everybody needs that soup friend. You know, we all have one.
Yeah.
We all need to have that in our back pocket because there's times where we really need that. You know, there's only so much we can do to care for ourselves at times. And we do need those people that are there to jump in and bring the soup or do the things.
Yeah. When we don't feel good, we usually don't take great care of ourselves because we're busy doing something else. So if someone wants to care for you, they love you. Great. Let them. I think it's really our issue to be like, no, but in fact, it's not theirs. And we would do the same. Would you not if your neighbor's like, hey, Jen, feeling terrible. Can you help me out? He's like, God, you know, we'd probably go way overboard. Of course, we would be there.
Absolutely. Especially because I have some elderly neighbors. I'd be like, okay, what can I bring? What store do you need me to go to? Shovel your sidewalk.
There's some flowers. There's bread. I got you some movies. I got you some magazines.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Okay. So in chapter 8, you also have, and I love this. I hope you're okay with me sharing this.
Yeah, please.
You have a list and it's common things people say and how the snarky responses.
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm. Oh, my goodness. Okay. Do you mind if we go over a couple?
No, let's go.
Okay. Yeah. So stupid comment. At least you don't have X, Y, or Z. So the witty response would be, thank you for pointing out the fact that you don't feel I am sick enough to deserve your care and attention. I'll just remove you from my supporting list or support list.
Absolutely.
Sorry.
Yeah.
That's
absolutely
a great one.
Yeah.
That's a great one. Do you have any of these memorized off the top of your head?
No, but I can look them up in my book. You read them.
Okay. I just didn't know if you wanted to share them too. Okay. Stupid comment. Girl, just keep positive.
Mm-hmm, that's always great.
We all hear that a lot.
What did I? Yeah. Oh, wait, I have a response. Where is it? Oh, fuck off. Is that positive enough for you?
I love it. I love it. Or, of course, have you tried yoga, paleo, or CBD?
Have you tried minding your own business? That works well, too.
Oh, my gosh. I love it. I think we did this like 11 years ago.
Well, you know, it's kind of like when someone pulls out in front of you, in your mind, you want to just hit them with your car, right? You're just like, oh, you just want to hit them. These comments are kind of like the same. Like, you know, you want to just throw that back. And sometimes after they leave, you're like, yeah, I wish I would have said that to them. So I wanted to just supply them up front. Yeah, you're going to hear these people say those things. And you've probably certainly heard, oh, but you don't look sick. Oh, you look so good. You look so like, oh, you look so good. And I'm like, sorry, I don't look bad enough for you to get your attention and to get your sympathy. I'll try to look worse next time. I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I went to work one time and one of my coworkers actually asked me if I came straight from the gym. Yeah, I look that bad, huh?
Thank you.
Nope, just having a rough, you know, flare morning, but thanks.
But what about you? Did you go to the gym too? Oh. Mm-hmm. I know.
Yeah. Thanks for that.
Yeah, I think the thing that I have learned that's been helpful for me here is if you've got someone, if you don't know what's going on with them, you don't have to ask them what's going on with them. You can simply say, how are you doing today? Someone's lost a loved one. Someone's been sick. Someone's battled cancer. Just not how are you doing, but just how are you doing today? That allows them to share what they want to share. It allows us to focus on the urgency of just the current moment.
Sorry, I'm still here. I was just going through more pages trying to decide what to ask you next.
Whatever you want.
Okay, so who's your ideal reader? You know, do you encourage people that do not have lupus to read this as well? Like, I have rheumatoid arthritis, but I still felt that this is such a good book that anyone with a similar autoimmune condition should definitely read. But who is your ideal reader?
The ideal reader, I would think, is someone who is newly diagnosed with lupus and doesn't know anything about what they're going to face. Because when I was diagnosed, I knew no one and I felt really alone. And my family was, you know, they were there for me, but they had no idea what I was up against. But it's funny you said that because I was downstairs doing dishes earlier and I'm like, maybe I need like the girlfriend's guide to autoimmune diseases, because that's the feedback that's been very beneficial and helpful for me is that, well, I think it was the first beta reader. She's like, well, she gave me her feedback, but she's like, I really wish that this book would be for Hashimoto's, or maybe you just make a general one to everyone else, because I feel like a lot of these, you know, the ideas would fit with them. And I think that's a lovely compliment. My brain does not have the bandwidth to write a whole new book right now, but I'll put it in maybe 2025.
There you go. And it can always be, you know, the girlfriend's guide to autoimmune conditions or something. I don't know. That sounds wordy, yeah, and terrible, but I'm sure there's something out there.
We'll figure it out. Yeah. You know, I don't know if you've talked to anyone who've written books. It took a lot. There was a lot of crying on my behalf. There was a lot of isolation. I felt like I was shoved in, like, intentionally. I chose to be in a cave for like 15 months of just writing. I was also really, my lupus was really bad then. So I would have points where I couldn't even see the screen and I would just continue on because I must have some weird, neurotic, insatiable drive to just finish. So I am grateful for what was done, but I just never understood how much perseverance is needed and how little money is made from a book. But that's just the truth. Now you all know.
Absolutely. Because, you know, it's not all sunshine and rainbows and it's not as easy as they make it seem on a movie. You know, life is not a Hallmark movie.
No, neither is a marriage. Neither is raising children. You know, neither is life. Life is messy and life is complicated and it's hard. And I really feel that it's supposed to be like that because it forces us out of our comfy zone and it forces us to change and grow and stretch.
Absolutely. Okay. So looking back, what do you wish you'd known at the very beginning of your health journey?
Ooh, what a good question. What do I wish I had known? Oh, there was so much out there that I wish I knew. I think one thing I wish I knew is that part of your health is gone. That's a fact. Lupus or whatever else has robbed you of it. It's stolen it in the middle of the night. But that doesn't mean that you're left with nothing. I wish I'd known that, you know, the health still remains in my hands, part of it. And that is very, very impactful because the healthier you can be, the more manageable your disease is. And so that's a big mind shift that I had gone through. And when I figured it out, that's really what allowed me to write the book. Like, oh my gosh, I've got some things in here. I have to share this with women like right away.
Absolutely. And I'm so glad you did.
Thank you.
Okay. Finally, what message or takeaway do you hope readers will carry with them after reading your book on lupus?
Well, the first one is, of course, I want women to know that they have control of their health. They have control of what they do on a daily basis. But then I also want them to know that they are not their lupus, because I can relate to that. When I was first diagnosed, I was like, I'm lupus. You know, everything was lupus. I would get angry when like something would happen. I'd be like, I have lupus. Can't you just leave me alone? It was just an identity that was like right here, like this big badge on my face, a big tattoo or something. And eventually I learned that I didn't want it attached to me, that I didn't want to be known for lupus. I didn't want to, you know, say lupus all the other time. I didn't want it to be a thing. So I began to understand that I was a lot more. I began to prioritize that I was just me, trying the best to be me. The, you know, at the root of me is really love and kindness. And it wasn't what hair I had left or what hair I had. It wasn't my role of a mom or a wife or an author or anything like that. It was all of these roles just kind of line up behind me. But first and foremost, is I am me, and I have to be happy with how I choose to live my life because I'm the one responsible for it.
Yes.
Even though that jerk lupus, you know, came into play.
Yes. You are not your diagnosis. You are not lupus. And you are more than all the side effects and symptoms and flares. You, at the end of the day, are Amanda freaking Che.
That's right. Yeah, and it has to make sense. I mean, this is where I've been doing a lot of like self work. The counseling work is just to be like, you know, it's not what I achieve. It's not how many books I sell. It's my ability to be happy and satisfied with what I've produced in this world, what I've given out there, and always that I have the best intentions to write a book that would help other women along that journey. And I just have to kind of let it out and be like, universe, there we go. Do what you weigh. And that's hard, right? Certainly when you spend so much of your time, it's hard to do just that, but it's what's needed.
Indeed. Well, thank you so much for coming and giving us your time. Is there anything we haven't covered about yourself, about this book that we have? I mean, what have we not discussed? Did we leave anything out?
The only thing I would say is that when I wrote the book, I was like, women, I'm going to find it out for you. I'm going to find out exactly what we should eat, and then we're all going to eat that way. I'm going to find out all of these secrets of lupus, and I'm going to tell it to you. And as you know from reading the book, I didn't reveal any big secrets because the secrets aren't out there hidden. Like, you don't have to be paleo or gluten-free or any of these things. You should not eat alfalfa sprouts. You should not eat mung bean sprouts. But besides that, a lot of these things that we thought that might be these hidden gems on how to control our health are no really hidden gems. They're just the small, consistent things that we do on a daily basis. It's not you running a marathon. It's you getting up every hour and walking around for a few minutes. It's you eating the food that you know you need to do. It's managing the stress that comes at you. All of these things are within our control. And that's really what I wanted people to know in the end.
And you did it. You did it. And I thank you so much for writing this book. And like I said, I don't have lupus, but I enjoyed it. And I still think that I learned so much from it. And I think that is beneficial to me in its own way as well.
Yes. And for that, that's, you know, very impactful. It makes my heart happy to hear that.
Well, I guess we've covered it all, haven't we? I feel like I could talk
to
you for hours and ask you a million questions, but, you know, we'll just have to have you come back again.
That's right. Anytime. I'm happy to give some insight just from my end.
All right. Well, everyone, thank you for joining us. And be sure to check out Amanda. Where is the best place to find you and contact you if they want to get in touch?
You can buy the book on Amazon, and you can go to the website Amanda Che, which is Chay, because, you know, that was available. So you can find me there. And on Instagram, I'm at Amanda E. Che.
All right. Sounds wonderful. And I will make sure to have all of this in the show notes for you all. And until next time, don't forget your spoon. The information, opinions, and recommendations presented in this podcast are for general information only. Consult your own physician for any medical issues that you may be having.
The information should not be taken as a replacement for medical, clinical, professional advice, diagnoses, or medical intervention. My Spoonie sisters and guests will not be held liable for any of the consequences of such action or inaction. Trigger warning. Some episodes may cover sensitive topics, including, but not limited to, suicide, abuse, mental illness, and chronic disease. You are advised to refrain from listening if you are likely to be offended or adversely impacted by any of these topics. None of the guests or hosts will be responsible for your use of the information contained therein. Life is not merely to be alive, but to be well. Living a life with a chronic illness is best described with one word: unpredictable. Be Well's products are designed to make the unpredictable easier to deal with. Back when I was getting my infusions, I would have loved to have their adult zip hoodie. They even have one in pink. They also have everything from one-day pill holders to urgency buckets. So remember, they want to make your life a little easier. So be sure to check out Be Well.